Paul, A Journey, Jerusalem.
Grab your Bible and let's talk.
Welcome to the Bible Glitter and Glue podcast, where Bible study and thought-provoking conversation lead to creative teaching. Now, here are your hosts, David and Mary Nelson.
Thank you for joining us in this episode of Bible Glitter and Glue. I'm David, and across from me is my wife, Mary.
Hello.
And we're in the book of Acts. Our conversation today actually covers a longer section in the book of Acts. We're going to be talking about Acts 20, verse 13, all the way through Acts chapter 22, verse 29, and Paul is on his journey to Jerusalem.
That's right, David. I feel like we're going to hear a lot of paper shuffling, possibly. You and I both have printed out a lot of notes, a lot of paper. Sometimes when we're teaching, as teachers, we have to make a lot of decisions about how we're going to present material, and we've even done that right before we've started this episode, because there's so much here, it seems easier to put it into a little bit of manageable format. And so there's a lot of verses here, but I've tried my best to put it into two main points. So from Acts chapter 20, starting in verse 13, all the way through to Acts 21, verse 16, we'll call that our first point. And the first point is Paul travels to Jerusalem, and there'll be a lot of places he stops along the way, but that whole part is his traveling to Jerusalem. And then the second point is what happens to Paul when he's in Jerusalem. So that's Acts chapter 21, verse 17, all the way through to Acts 22, verse 29. So 2 points, going to Jerusalem and in Jerusalem.
All right, that's great. That simplifies things, and I think we need that for this long section. The section begins in verse 13 of chapter 20, and Paul is in Troas. So he leaves Troas on this journey to Jerusalem. And Luke, who writes the book of Acts, gives him a fairly detailed travel itinerary, which I find very interesting. You can look up these places on the map after you read the text. But anyway, he goes to place called Miletus. And there in Miletus, he wants to meet with the elders from Ephesus, who in Ephesus was at a little distance. And so they come to Miletus to talk with Paul, because this is the last time he will be with them. Paul has some very important things he needs to share with them, because this is his farewell to them.
And it's not just a lot of instructions. You really get the idea of Paul is speaking from his heart. He's saying the most important things they need to know as leaders in the church, how to lead people. And it's not just being bosses. He gets down to some very personalized information, how to serve people and lead them.
And he uses his own life as an example, and he asks them to follow his example in leading people and encouraging people. And he challenges them, he encourages them to be faithful to their calling by feeding the church, by protecting the church. At the very end, there's a very touching scene where they all kneel down and they pray and they weep for one another. This is a very touching scene. He has to say goodbye to them, and he leaves these important words with them as he travels on to Jerusalem.
And it says they went with him to the ship. So this is just so personal and such a beautiful thing to think about these last farewells. But Paul then goes on. He continues on this journey. He is determined to go to Jerusalem. In fact, earlier it says he's hurrying to get there, if he can, by the festival of Pentecost. The next stop Paul makes is a place called Tyre, and again, he meets with the Christians that are there, and again, we have a very touching scene. I mean, they're worried about him. They really don't want him to go to Jerusalem, and actually, in one sense, that's wise advice to not go, because there'll be trouble there, but even though it's wise advice, Paul knows that there's more to it. It's the Spirit that is driving him. It's the Spirit's guidance that is taking him to Jerusalem despite the trouble there.
There's a touching scene here like there was when he spoke to the Ephesian elders, because because the church goes out to the beach, and it says including the kids, and they pray and they say their goodbyes.
This was a lesson that I shared with some interns that came my way, and we went out to the beach. We read this story sitting by the ocean. There was a ship out in the bay, and we talked about how Paul would have felt and how they would have felt as they saw Paul off in the same way these interns of mine were leaving. And that was very touching to think about that happening.
Yeah. Paul leaves, and the ship lands at the beautiful port city of Caesarea. And he goes to the home of Philip and stays with Philip, who's one of those original seven chosen back in Acts chapter 6 to feed the widows of the church.
And didn't we last have an event with Philip when he taught the man from Ethiopia?
And that's the last we hear of Philip.
So here he is again. He's been busy. And here we are 20 years later. And Philip, with four daughters, is living here in Caesarea. Paul catches up with him.
And it says these four daughters are prophetesses. Luke doesn't tell us what they prophesy, but I think we can assume that they too were saying that trouble awaits Paul in Jerusalem if he goes.
In addition to Philip's daughters, there's another prophet named Agabus that comes to the gathering, and he also has a message of warning for Paul about dangers ahead. And I love, as a teacher, how he has an object lesson. He takes Paul's belt and he ties himself up as a demonstration of there's danger ahead in Jerusalem, and the man whose belt I'm using is going to be tied up in Jerusalem. Things that are going to happen in Jerusalem. And yes, that's true. These are prophecies. But Paul is determined to go to Jerusalem because even though there are dangers, he may be tied up. He has said before he's willing to die for the message he is teaching.
They were begging Paul not to go. And Paul says, why are you crying? That's making me so sad. It's really upsetting Paul that they were upset. And like you said, Mary, he's willing to die for Jesus because this is the will of God for him, and he has to go.
Finally, after this journey, after all of these stops, Paul arrives in Jerusalem. And he meets up with the Christians there. And in particular, we hear another character again, James. This is James, the brother of Jesus, I think.
This is James, the brother of Jesus. We last heard about him in Acts chapter 15, and he's still the leader of the church in Jerusalem. He's the primary person in the church in Jerusalem.
It seems like James has always been concerned about how Jews and Gentiles get along and preserving what is good and important about Jewish customs and the whole world of the Jews, and he's concerned about that. And he wants to make sure people understand that Paul is not writing off Jews just because he's been teaching Gentiles. He still believes that being a Jew is important.
Yeah, we have to understand that being a Jew and doing these Jewish practices, it wasn't just a belief, it was a way of life. It was a part of their culture, it was a part of their identity as the people of God.
And these weren't things that were right and wrong, just worship. Well, these were customs and things people did as a Jew to celebrate or do that, like you said, just made them Jew, made them Jewish.
So James says, look, there's a rumor that among our people here, these thousands of Jewish followers of Jesus, that you're telling Jews to forsake the law of Moses, not to engage in these Jewish practices anymore. And this is just a rumor. And so to show that this is a false rumor, we have four men here who have taken a vow, and we would like for you to pay for their cleansing ceremony at the end of their vow to show that this is not true. And Paul agreed to it. We have to remember that Paul has been traveling for many years now among Gentiles in the Gentile world, and Gentiles were considered unclean. And now Paul is back in Jerusalem. He's going to be going into the temple to end this rite of purification, this cleansing ceremony for these men. And so he himself had to be cleansed. He would have been expected to be cleansed since he's been traveling. And so he does that for himself as well.
But he doesn't actually get that far, does he? things are interrupted, and there are a lot of angry people in Jerusalem, people that are angry about Paul and believing these false rumors and just generally not happy with the fact that their faith is being threatened.
So when Paul goes into the temple area, there were some Jews there who recognized Paul from, it says, from Asia, probably meaning from Ephesus. They start shouting that this is the man who is teaching Jews everywhere to go against the law of Moses. And now they say he's brought a Greek person into the temple, and everything erupted then.
Well, neither of those things that were just said were true.
No.
These are lies, and this is just stirring up the crowd. And so it goes badly for Paul. All of those warnings, remember, that there was going to be danger, that bad things were going to happen in Jerusalem. Here we go.
They grab Paul, and they're starting to beat Paul. So there's all this commotion going on, and the Romans are nearby. They had their barracks right there by the temple.
In verse 31, David, it even says the people were about to kill Paul. That's how close things were getting.
The Romans come to Paul's rescue once again. They've done that several times in his life, and so they come to his rescue. The Roman commander wants to know what's going on, what's happening here, and so he wants to interrogate Paul. But he couldn't hear anything because the crowd kept shouting and shouting. He was bringing him back into the barracks. But before they get there, Paul asks permission to speak to the people.
Even the fact that Paul was addressing the commander in Greek, the commander was impressed by that. Oh, you can speak Greek. He thought, well, this could work. Maybe you can calm the crowd down.
I can imagine that when they get to the top of the stairs, Paul probably looked like a pitiful sight. Beaten, bruised, maybe clothes torn. And he identifies himself to the commander as, I'm a Jew from Tarsus of Cilicia.
Well, right then that was news to the commander because another rumor. He thought he was someone else. He thought, oh, this was a troublemaker that we've heard about. And so right away he says, oh, okay, this is a Jew. He's one of these people.
Right. The commander gives Paul permission to speak to the crowd. And so Paul begins speaking in their language, Aramaic, and they get quiet. One thing about this talk of Paul is that he emphasizes his Jewishness. And this is the second time in Acts that we hear about Paul's meeting of Jesus on the road to Damascus. That was back in chapter 9, the actual event, and now Paul is rehearsing that. But here, what Paul does, he emphasizes just how Jewish he is. And so he goes out of his way to do that. He speaks their language, even though he's born in Tarsus. He was brought up in Jerusalem, and actually he was taught by the greatest rabbi of the day, Gamaliel. He said that he knew the law thoroughly, and not only that, he was very zealous for the law and zealous for God's honor, so much so that he persecuted those that he considered were guilty of dishonoring God, Jewish followers of Jesus.
So he just establishes rapport with this audience, which is really important. So he has their ear. They will listen to him for a while as he goes on to explain his mission. What happened when he met Jesus on the road to Damascus? The very trip he was on, he was going to hurt Christians, but he met Jesus and everything changed. He literally saw the light and he understood. From that point on, he would follow Jesus and he would tell people the good news. And again, they were listening to all of this. It sounded good. And then things took a turn when he mentioned his mission.
It says that he later returned to Jerusalem. He was in the holy city and he sees a vision of Jesus there. Jesus tells him to hurry, leave Jerusalem because you're in big trouble. He says, leave. He says, I will send you far away to the Gentiles. When he mentioned the word Gentiles is when the crowd, who up to that point were listening to Paul, who identified with Paul, they lost it right there. Get rid of him. Someone like this doesn't deserve to live. And so they were throwing off their coats. They were throwing dust in the air. Once again, the commander has to rescue Paul.
So he does what a Roman commander would do. He takes Paul into the barracks, and he's a prisoner. They're going to beat the prisoner. There must be trouble. He must need punishments. They're about to punish Paul and beat him. And then Paul, who had spoken Greek, and then he had spoken Aramaic, he had a speech on these steps. Now he drops a bombshell to these Roman soldiers. He says, is it right to beat a Roman citizen?
Yes, a Roman citizen that hasn't been pronounced guilty yet.
So just like that word Gentile stirred up that crowd, the words Roman citizens calmed down those Roman soldiers. They stopped. They would not beat a Roman citizen who had not been brought to trial. That's against the law. Yeah. They would get in a lot of trouble for that.
Big trouble. It's interesting, Mary, that when he was speaking to his Jewish audience, he was very Jewish. And now, to his Roman captors, he mentions that he's a Roman citizen. So this is an example, because later Paul writes, I've become all things to all men. I think we have an example of that here. The Roman commander still wants to get to the bottom of this. So he decides to call a meeting of the Jewish ruling council, the Sanhedrin. Our story ends here.
In a way, the last chapters of Acts begin here, because this sets the scene, because from here on out, we're going to hear what happens to Paul. He wanted to get to Jerusalem, but ultimately, he wanted to go to Rome. And this begins his journey. And David, I know we need another episode of this podcast to talk about that, because that's a lot. One of the things I read when I read this is about Paul's perseverance. To help them understand what perseverance means, I think I would try to explain it as perseverance means that you keep doing the right thing even when it gets hard. So I might give some examples. If the children play soccer, maybe I'll talk about what if in the soccer game, the other team started winning. Would you just say, okay, we give up, we quit. If they're going to score a goal, I quit. I'm not going to do it. That's not persevering when things get tough. Persevering means saying, okay, this is tough. They scored a goal, but we're going to keep trying. We're going to keep trying until the end of the game because we have perseverance. We're not going to give up just because it's tough. And that's a sports example. But just think what that will mean in their Christian walk. I want them to think, you know, in our Christian walk, things will get difficult sometimes. There'll be temptations. There'll be failures. But we don't give up. Helping children understand that strength of doing the right thing is really important and actually critical to their Christian growth and their stickability to the Christian faith. I think helping them see mistakes as not a bad thing. Making a mistake means you get a chance to learn something. And so next time, you try to do it a little differently because you remember that mistake. When we fail, when we don't make the team, when we don't get to go on that trip, when our grade is not great, we make those mistakes. We have those times when things don't go well, but that's okay. It can make us stronger because we learn what it is to make a mistake, get up, and keep on trying.
Mary, those are good thoughts. And, you know, that just doesn't apply to children. That things that adults need to learn and practice, too. And, you know, I think James, in his letter, talks about perseverance.
Right. James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. It's actually a really good memory verse or set of verses for children to memorize and adults, like you said. But James says, my brothers, you will have many kinds of troubles, but when these things happen, you should be very happy. You know that these things are testing your faith, and this will give you patience. Let your patience show itself perfectly in what you do. Then you will be perfect and complete. You will have everything you need. There's that perseverance. that perseverance, just trying again when things get tough or when you have troubles, when you have disappointments and mistakes. Don't look at those just as the end of the world. Think, oh, okay, actually, I can feel good about that because here's a chance to learn something and get better. So those are the things I want to talk about with children in Bible class, and even give them some examples of being determined, having perseverance about reading their Bible or going to church or setting goals, memorizing scripture, and that things will happen and they make mistakes or they get sidetracked, but it's going back and trying again and again. And I want them to learn that. So I think of those things in a children's class, but what about you, David? What about adults?
Well, this is a long section. We mentioned earlier Luke gives some detail about their travel itinerary, and I think it would be an interesting class to have a blank map of the world in Paul's day. And you might have someone in the class who is artistic to draw this map. You might have to do it a week before the class so it can be done. And just make it big enough to where people can see it and then put it up on the wall. And then as you're reading these stories, you have someone just draw the itinerary and just write in the places where Paul stops. All these places that are mentioned in the text. And maybe when you get to those places, stop and talk about them. Talk about the text there. So just having a map being filled in as Paul is making his way from Troas to Jerusalem. That might add a dimension to the class that might be interesting. A second thing that can be done, look at chapter 20 where Paul stops in Miletus and he speaks to the Ephesian elders, these leaders of God's people, and he tells them things that are very important. So this is his last time he will see them. If you were to give a farewell talk to the church, and this is what you can challenge the class with, what would you say to them? What would you want them to know and to do that is very important to you? So that's something I think that will add to the class. And one more thing I want to mention is that Paul is given the opportunity to speak to a hostile group of how he became a follower of Jesus. So you can ask the class, what is your story? How did you become a follower of Jesus, and let people tell their story? And then you can follow up with this question, how has your understanding of what was expected of you as a follower, how has that changed since you first began your journey with Jesus? So those are three different kinds of things you can do in the class that I think will add some depth and some meaning to the class.
Well, those are great, David. As we're learning about Paul in the new dimension today, about his determination, about this journey to Jerusalem, it does remind me that we're on a journey and we will have a lot of things happen on this journey, some good, some bad, but it's the idea of listening to God and obeying him and following him wherever he takes us. I think that's really important. And I want the children that I teach, and I know you're the same with the adults, I want them to be brave and be determined to continue in their journey.
And may God bless you as you speak into the lives of adults and children.
Thank you for listening to the Bible Glitter and Glue podcast. Subscribe now to listen to new weekly episodes and visit missionbibleclass.org for more free resources to help you share God's word with children.